All right, we are live. Hey there, Laker fans. Welcome to another episode of Lakers Detail. I'm your host, Vinay, with my co-host, Raj. And Raj, do we have some news today to discuss since we last potted? Quick turnaround, like we mentioned last time. Couple more playoff games out of the way. We see a masterclass by Jokic in game five at Denver, just destroying everybody in front of him. And winning that game for Denver. And then today, Boston concludes their series against the Cavaliers. No Donovan Mitchell, who we will be talking about in a little bit, and a few other players. It looks like Cleveland just threw the white flag out there. And then a pivotal game five after a great win by OKC on the road against Dallas. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, a lot of fourth quarter heroics. They dropped the game to a Luka masterclass, I guess is what you could call it.
Yeah.
In OKC, so that game's going to six. So it'll be, you know, Minnesota and Dallas, OKC. It's still some series that we got to see what the conclusion is. Good basketball, exciting basketball, but it's not quiet in Lakerland, Raj. We've got two important pieces of news that we have to discuss today. But before we get into them, how are you doing, my friend?
I am doing well, doing well. It's funny. I don't remember a like Eastern Conference one seed having this many just absolutely boring basketball just going on. The Celtics series have been completely with zero drama, zero interesting factoids to it. They've been playing injured teams. They obviously got Miami without Jimmy Butler, and then a Cavs team that really is just on the rails with, you know, Garland really not playing well, Donovan Mitchell out, Caris LeVert out, Jared Allen. Yeah, it's been fun. Before we get into like Laker stuff, Vinay, I wanted to ask you, where do you come down on the Gobert discourse? Because I think this is interesting. Yeah. I think it's kind of NBA Twitter is its own kind of universe and lexicon of conversations. And I love that it can get separated even in our niche that we have. Yeah. There's just like two sides of these coins of, this is just Jokic's brilliance.
Yeah.
And Gobert is being put in an oven on 380 degrees. Where are you at in this conversation? Is this good defense by Gobert? Is this, these are Gobert's kind of struggles as a player, kind of deficiencies as a player? Or is this just Jokic doing what only one man in this world can do for you?
Yeah. So I honestly, I think it's a little bit of both. Like there are some possessions where when Jokic is having to use like three, four different fakes before he gets a shot off, that's usually good defense. Like a guy's not taking three, four fakes to get a shot off in the post, especially not a guy of Jokic's caliber, unless he's, you know, concerned about getting blocked or the guy that's getting challenged. So I've seen a couple of like clips get pushed out there. And like, you know, of course, the way Twitter works, whatever the sentiment is on the timeline, the most popular sentiment is on the timeline, the really lazy analysis, sometimes that comes from like some of the bigger basketball accounts will just add to it and just, you know, basically copy paste that sentiment. But I thought a lot of last night was Jokic being amazing. And then also Gobert just like doing his absolute best and not being able to stop him. Like we've seen that happen with Anthony Davis on our end. Like we've seen him keep Jokic out of the paint, force him to the 3-point line. And then Jokic hits a crazy turnaround, follow away three, as time expires, that banks in or something crazy like that. And it's like, we've seen AD literally put his hands up and be like, bro, what am I supposed to do? Like, what? Like, you know, that just, it is what it is. So I don't think, I think on some possessions, Jokic definitely, I mean, Gobert definitely got deep fried. But I thought for the most part, like, I thought he did a good job, dude. I was talking to my guy, Tony, he's over in Atlanta. He made a really nice point, which I agreed with, which was like, you can't let Jokic get like 13 assists, 12, 13, like those assists hurt you way, way more than him playing up 40, because those assists are usually going to guys that like outside of like the KCP or the Jamal Murray, the MPJ, it's going to guys that can't shoot. So like Christian Braun getting a bunch of assists off of, like scoring off of a bunch of Jokic assists, or Aaron Gordon scoring off of a bunch of Jokic assists, that hurts you way more because those are guys you should be able to ignore completely on offense. And the fact that he's getting them involved and still putting up, you know, 30 plus points, 35 plus points a night, that hurts you a lot. So it's a mixed bag, dude. Defense is unrewarding. If you get torched, that's all people care about. Nobody really like goes, oh, wow, great defense, unless it's blockers.
Exactly. And look, I was kind of disappointed. And I mean, I guess I shouldn't be shocked Draymond did Draymond things, but Draymond went on NBA on TNT. And he's, you know, he's smarter than this, but he goes on the biggest, most national broadcast analysis platform and basically goes out there and pretends like it's one-on-one between Jokic and Gobert, and that it's not the scheme, that obviously the scheme that they want is Karl Anthony Towns on Jokic, and so then Gobert can be the roamer. But instead, you know, Draymond just goes out there and goes, Gobert, it was your fault, you know, you blamed him. And I, like, for me, I've always said this about Gobert, Vinay, it's my last thing on this, it's more of an offensive issue to me for him, the idea that he cannot score on the other end, or the idea that that like Denver put Jamal Murray on him countless times and Minnesota had zero trust to give him the ball. To me, that's a lot more debilitating for your team while you're getting cooked on the other end. But no, Jokic was just special. That combination of passing with the touch is just unfair. Like, it's just, it's unfair, bro. Like
okay. He had two possessions where he front cut, Karl Anthony Towns from the perimeter. And I was just like, nobody said it on the broadcast. Like, they showed the replay, but I was just like, bro, this is stuff that in like high school basketball, if you get front cut by anybody, like looking at the ball and letting the guy cut in front of you, like your coach benches you and like you don't play the rest of the game. Like, if that happens. And Jokic was just, I thought he was doing everything. The other thing I want to say is Denver hurt them the same way that they hurt us until we kind of figured it out, which is, if Jokic can beat your big man down the floor, you're in trouble, because good chance is that you don't have somebody to match up size-wise. Now everybody's scrambling to pick guys up. Somebody doesn't get picked up. And I think, like, I want to say, like, Christian Braun had a dunk off of that scramble. Gordon had a dunk off a scramble. Like, that hurts you bad. You have to do all your work before Jokic crosses the half. It's like, you've got to get back before he crosses half court. And I thought they exposed that. Denver exposed that very, very well against a bigger Minnesota team.
Yeah, and look, I think people do this a lot when, you know, teams start to win back-to-back, you compare them to other ones. Mm-hmm. But like, the point of reference I have obviously is the 09-10 Lakers. Aaron Gordon must have been what it felt like when Lamar Odom dropped 25 on other teams. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like just the opponent of what they felt like. To me, when Aaron Gordon drops, has a 10 of 11 game, there's just no beating Denver. But just the basketball that they have is just so tough to stop. I mean, even though Minnesota won the first two games, Mike Malone adjusted their Jaden McDaniels, Anthony Edwards ball pressure was taking over the game. And they're like, Jokic's just going to bring it up the whole time. And Rudy Gobert, if you want a full court pressure, you're going to get beat off the dribble to the rim. And Jokic is just so skilled. And he turned on his scoring cap the last two games. It's just, they are a puzzle that no one's solved yet. So I'm interested to see, you know, how that series goes on. But yeah, just want to get your take on, because I think it's an interesting kind of point when, you know, everyone's joking on Gobert over there, and it's very easily just to, and not that people would do this because AD has much better standing, just his reputation as a star. But it's like, AD was also just, you know, that, like, AD had a tough time with Jokic, Bam Adebayo had a tough time with Jokic. Like, that's, there's no one in the world that can guard him right now. So just want to kind of relay that point before we get into these Laker things.
Yeah, it's very, I will also say this, like, I think I was very curious to see how playing much bigger against Minnesota would fare, and I haven't seen anything that deters me from thinking that playing bigger is not the way to beat them. I think playing bigger is the way to beat them. I think Minnesota just uniquely has, you know, Conley was out also, so they kind of missed out on a guy who could create plays with the other guys. But, like, I think there is a part of this where you could argue that Minnesota has played pretty good defense. Like, they've wiped Jamal Murray out of that series completely. Like, but the other guys have kind of fallen asleep, you know? Like, you said, Aaron Gordon can't – like, MPJ hasn't really had, like, crazy series himself, like, and that's a guy who's a regular scorer. So now you're knocking out their second and third scores, which means that if you're losing to them, and granted it's a 3-2 series, so it's still close, you're losing on the margin somewhere else. So fast break points, turnovers, that sort of thing. So I still like that idea, you know, because I think we positioned, like, maybe the Lakers should play bigger. But yeah, it's been good basketball. Jokic is a unique problem, dude. He's legitimately a unique problem because he can play point guard, and that flips the geometry of basketball. Like, you're always used to the big man being down at the paint, and Jokic flips that on its head and says, no, I can just stand out here and beat you guys from out here too as well.
Yeah, bro, the play you're talking about, like, that's just not a play that, like, he's coming off a cross screen at, like, the free throw line, and he's getting a screen, like, he's running pick and roll as the ball handler, and he's having another big screen for him, right? So, like, he's trying to get Gobert on him, and he's handling the ball and putting pocket passes on the money. Like, it's just, like, it's really tough to stop, and it's just he's a unicorn, and in that way. So yeah, no one's found the solve yet.
I just want to say this one thing. This is my last thought on this. You know, we talk about, like, some of the best duos in the history of the NBA. And I know for a while there was this conversation about, like, Draymond and Steph being like these two guys. It's Clay and Steph, but, you know, also Draymond and Steph, sort of the yin and yang of how they work and how they kind of know each other, like the back of their hands and stuff like that, especially when they were the short roll stuff, all that sort of stuff. I'd like to position Jokic and Aaron Gordon as, like, not the greatest duo, but, like, a duo that's very underrated, because I think those two guys complement each other in a way that I don't think people appreciate enough. You have a guy who is willing to cut any and every single time his big man,
hard as hell,
gets stuck anywhere. You have a guy who's willing to play center for him if he has to, if he gets pulled out to the perimeter. Lot of good things that they do, so we don't have to get into all of it because we're not doing Nuggets analysis. But I just want people to think about it that way. Like, though, that pairing, that sort of inside-outside pairing, is not inside-outside, but just stylistically how they play with each, complement each other, it's unique. You know, I don't think you see too many teams able to do that very, very effectively, and they do it probably the best of any team in the league.
Yeah, and for me, last thing on this, I would just put a trio in there. I think it's Murray, Jokic, and Gordon, and, like, those three are the hub of everything. Like, MPJ has got his money already, so he's kind of accepted. I'll stand here in the corner all day. I'll run corner to corner, and you don't have to run anything for me. KCP as well, I'll stand in the corner. Those three work in the gut, as they call it, in the middle of the floor.
Yeah.
And however you defend that is how they score on you. And it's just, you go over the top of a Jamal Murray screen, then you got Jokic in the short roll. If you, you know, go under, Jamal Murray has a jump shot. If you trap that, then you have Jokic lob to Aaron Gordon. Like, it's just, when they closed this out, Vinay, it was that action every time. We defended it a different way every time, and they scored a different way every time. It's just, they're a tough cover. Kudos to them. Sadly.
That's a nice way of putting it. But continuing on, let's shift over to the Lakers side of things. There's a few pieces of news that came out today we should discuss. First and foremost, last time we talked about that, about JJ Redick being a candidate for the Lakers head coaching position, and that there were a few other names that were also, James Borrego was there named to as well. Kenny Atkinson was named to as well. And then today we found out that the Lakers got permission to speak to a few more players. I think in the chat there was somebody who said that the Lakers can interview coaches at any time if they want to. And that's not the case. Like, the other team has to give permission to that coach to do that. Some teams just don't do that. It's not one of those things where the assistant coach just goes, I'm just going to go interview for this position. It doesn't work like that. What ended up happening was we got permission to talk to a couple of the other names that we've been discussing: Mike Anori, Chris Quinn, David Adelman. And then they re-mentioned, I think Woj re-mentioned Borrego and whatnot. And then some other news came out from Mark Stein, which is what we're going to talk about for our first segment, which is JJ Redick has made the strongest impression of the guys that they've interviewed so far. I have heard the same, Raj, that JJ Redick I haven't heard that he's made the impression, a strong impression. I've heard that the Lakers like the package of whatever he is, right? Because I don't know what the details are of those actual interviews, but they like whatever he is. And that story about Coach K being consulted as part of, you know, the coaching process and how do you set the culture of the franchise, that sort of thing. That's a real thing, because he might have a role, not within the franchise, but in terms of constructing sort of a, you know, helping us understand what the coaching staff should have and how to approach the roster when it comes from a coaching standpoint. But JJ Redick is in the lead. I would like to know what your thoughts are on JJ Redick. Basketball player, ESPN announcer, podcaster, and potential Lakers head coach.
Yes. So this is how I think is a good way to frame this conversation. What do the Lakers like about JJ Redick, right? Like, I think that's a good, like, what are they seeing that he's in the lead? And just to be frank, I don't remember if I send this here or wherever. I don't think it's a race. I think JJ's just running laps by himself. You know, like, I'm not sure there's an actual race going on. Mark Stein used the words to quote him. It's his job to lose, right? I think that's the way it was.
Fascinating.
It was put out. Yeah. So, and though, like, Mark Stein, that those are strong words. Like, that's, those are very very poignant words to use in that situation. I like the Coach K stuff is fascinating and interesting to me. I honestly, Vinay, I do not care how JJ was at Duke. It's 20 years ago. That really has no impact for me in terms of the Lakers head coach. But I think what the Lakers like, obviously, and I think it's fair to assess that LeBron James and JJ Redick have a relationship, as much as people want to like put that down. They have an absolute relationship. It seems to be a positive one. And there seems to be a lot of mutual respect, not just from the career standpoint of JJ played in the league, from a basketball mind concept, from a production standpoint, right? In terms of the media space that LeBron's going in. These two look like gentlemen that are working together on things, and it looks like something that would be advantageous for the Lakers going forwards. And I think that's what the Lakers see, and they also see a basketball mind that's elevated a media empire very quickly. They see a guy who's obviously coached 15 years in the league, who's been around coaching circles. I think as a player, obviously it's different getting into that seat, but you have an affinity being with the job, just being around coaches as much as you do. I think that's what they see, and I think if the assistant coaches are put in correct positions, I think this can be successful. But are you with me on that? Is that what the Lakers are seeing to you? Like, is that the reasoning he's in the lead for you in this? Or is it just LeBron James kind of relationship here for you? Like, how much is the actual basketball kind of?
Yeah, so as much as the Bron folk who absolutely believe that I dislike Bron would like me to say this is just for Bron, I think a big part of this is locker room buy-in. I think there is a part of this where obviously superstar buy-in is a big deal, but the locker room buy-in is a big thing. And I think there are probably inclinations about, you know, how JJ incorporates analytics, how JJ incorporates, you know, just player sentiment, stuff like that, how willing JJ is to, work with the role players to help them understand why that's like the trust between I think there's something there with that. I think a lot of what the Lakers like about JJ has more to do with his personal skills, not tactical skills. And I think that's why he is in the lead that he's in, because look, man, like we talked about it in the last pod, you are not just dealing with, you know, basketball players. Like, you're dealing with LeBron James. You're dealing with Anthony Davis. Like, these are not usual. And then you're doing this for the Los Angeles Lakers. Like, that is already loaded territory as it is. Like, it's not that they're difficult to deal with, but it can be our franchise. Makes it easy for other people to set up minefields for a coach to trip himself up and get himself in trouble for what he says or what he does or what it is. And we know our fan base doesn't need very much to be upset or complain about when it comes to, you know, coaches or player performance or whatever it is. So I think being able to handle that is a big, big deal for the front office. And I think that's probably why he's higher up there. The bad part, or maybe the part that I would be concerned about if you're somebody who cares about the X's and O's, is that the X's and O's are not a priority. I have a theory as to why that's not a priority, But that would be, I understand that that's a legitimate concern. That JJ, we don't know what his X's and O's are like. Like, it's cool he talks about plays and breaks stuff down in podcast form, but that, how does that actually work in real time? Because I think you mentioned, right, you said it really nicely. Assistant coaches say all the time, when you move one seat over, that's a completely different thing. That's not the same thing as being an assistant coach. So I think that's why he's in the lead. I think the interpersonal skills are very, very important for this job. Navigating the landscape of Los Angeles media is a very important part of this. And look, man, the relationship with Bron and AD matters a lot too. And that would be the case for any team that has superstars.
Yeah, I'm with that. The tough part with JJ, you just really don't know, right? Everything you've gotten has been through a media kind of place, and it's all through kind of third-party media. You really have no idea what he'll be like as a coach. I think you're right. I think this is a lot of can he control a locker room, I guess, is a weird way to put it. He's the same age as LeBron. I mean, I don't know if you heard Udonis Haslam on I don't know what show it was, NBA Countdown or something, and Haslam, by the way, shout out Haslam for going for his own guy, but basically Chris came Green, out, yeah, and said, yeah, which to me kind of negated everything else he said in somewhat, but you know, came out and pretty much said the locker room would be divided, kind of. People would wonder if JJ,
I think he used the word cynical. He said the locker room would be cynical. They'd be side-eyeing JJ as he made decisions. Yeah,
exactly. They were side-eyeing him for if his ideas were LeBron's ideas. I don't think that needs to be cynical. Like, that's like, I think that would be, that's part of the calculation in this. That's baked in the calculation here. I don't know how you wouldn't think otherwise. That doesn't have to be a bad thing. Like, you know what I mean? That does not have to be a terrible thing. Yeah. I think being in lockstep with LeBron's basketball ideas, that's not a terrible thing, but he put it as a bad thing where, again, there could be some tough conversations that happen in terms of, you know, like, I talked about this with Mike Conley and with David Adelman. Like, can you be accountable to the stars?
Yes.
Right. While also walking that thin line of he's 40, you're 24. Like, your expectations on you are kind of different than the expectations on the superstar. That's a tough line to walk, but the idea that LeBron and JJ would not be in lockstep in basketball ideas, I think that's a strange concept. So if you go this JJ route, and I've been advocating for it, shout out Walt saying finding time for OVO. Yes. Although OVO's been in a little bit of a dark place, so there's not much. How much did y'all smoke? Absolutely none. Don't partake in that. Do not partake in those things. But no, like, I think this is obviously a step into having a guy that LeBron would buy in immediately. It was sold also bananas, like an AD move, which I don't know.
Okay. Can I add to your yeah, your point about that? Okay. So we were discussing this in the group chat, which you are also a part of. So this is not, us shouldn't be a surprise to you, but we should say it out loud. The positioning of the next coach being the coach for the LeBron and AD era, and then the AD era after that, I thought was a little bit like misleading. And I don't remember if I was the one who mentioned it in the chat or if somebody else was, but like, I thought it was a little misleading because if Bron extends for 3 years, by the time Bron retires or when his last season retires, AD's going to be like way out, like 2-3 years out of his prime. He might be like 34 or something like that. And you don't really have an AD era. You know what I mean? Like, he won't be like at 33, 34. He's probably not your priority anymore. Can he be an effective player? For sure. But again, like, a guy like LeBron, Steph, KD, those guys are outliers. They're not the norm. Like, this idea that like the coach is there for the post Bron AD era, which is going to be the AD era, I don't think that's what that is. I think this is going to be a coach that's going to be there for this era. And that will be it. And, you know, whether they keep the coach and continue the culture that they built, or you know, whatever the coach has built, and just swap out superstars, whatever it's supposed to be, it is what it is. But like, I just thought that was a little strange that it got positioned that way. And I was just like, the ages don't match up. Like, I would be surprised if we were prioritizing like playing around a 33-34 year old AD at that point.
Yeah, I think the point with that is more, JJ's been in the league more recently, right? So there's a little bit more connection to a guy of 80s age. They can kind of connect more on modern concepts. And I think that's more the thinking there in terms of JJ can maybe connect with AD more. I just, AD feels more Vinay apathetic to this type of stuff. I've said that, you know, a bunch. I just think AD goes out there and plays. Obviously, the Darvin Ham kind of quotes at the end of the season got taken for what they were, but I think that's more the JJ stuff. But no, this definitely, this, like, I don't know why we have to be so shy about it. Like, JJ and LeBron are doing a show every week. I'm sure they're texting a ton.
Yeah.
Like, they're conversating. They don't talk for 1 hour and go away. I promise. Like, there's conversations that's been happening back and forth. There's been plays being diagrammed together. I'm sure there's been conversations happening behind the scenes. And I don't think this is a bad, like, this does not have to be a bad thing. This is unprecedented territory.
Yeah.
Vinay. No one's ever been this good this long to where they can have a coach come in and be a peer. Like, it does not happen. The last one maybe was like Kareem, maybe, but I wasn't obviously around that time. But like, it's just unprecedented territory where a guy is this good and can still have this much organizational power, right? I was watching I was at the gym and they had the Celtics game on, and Al Horford hit a three at the end and started jumping for joy to put them up 17. And no, like he goes and jumps for joy. And I was wondering if he like passed some like mark or something like that. But he had like, he went like 6 for 11 from three.
Yeah.
And they were like, oldest player to do this line. And I looked at his age and it was 37 years old. Right. And that's old for an NBA player. Yeah. LeBron's turning 40 next year. Like, and his role is completely different from Al Horford. This is just unique territory, which I think sometimes calls for unique circumstances and unique decisions, which is why I don't poo-poo the JJ decision as much as, you know, I think a lot of people do. But yeah, I don't know why this has to be a bad thing. But why is this, you think, framed as such a negative kind of, like, why do people want to hide away from the LeBron and JJ relationship? I think this is something that you kind of dive into more. I understand for a front office can be tough, right? You're kind of kind of the keys out of your hands. But if you go this route, this is what you're doing. Like, I think there's no running away from it. But where are you at with it?
So I think okay. So I'm with you. You asked me last time we were on the pod, who would I want as a coaching candidate? And I jokingly said, it's true. I'm not completely joking. So whoever LeBron wants is who they should just go get, like who the extension is. And my logic for that was not, oh, we should just appease to LeBron or whatever it is, or placate him. My thing was, you might as well just go get the, like, he's going to sign here. You might as well just go get a guy who gets along with him, who will get him to buy in, or, you know, like that relationship matters, you know, like, and that sort of stuff matters. X's and O's. And I agree. All those other things matter too, as well. X's and O's, using the right lineups, timeouts, all that stuff matters too, as well. But if a superstar is not bought into your head coach, like, almost nothing else matters. Like, it's just
nothing else matters.
I'm sorry. That's just what it is. And if our superstar is doing a podcast with a guy that he thinks can legitimately be a good coach, look, the other thing is also this, Raj. The person that's making the recommendation for the head coaching position is also somebody who's been in the locker room and understands the capacity to which the head coach actually head coaches, for lack of a better term, for this team. Okay. If LeBron is aware that, okay, the head coach, I need him to take care of these sort of things, and then I need to be able to talk to him about this, because, you know, I'm usually the guy who's always on ball in clutch moments, that sort of thing. There is nobody better than LeBron James to make that recommendation. Regardless of what, you know what I mean? Like, regardless of what the accolades are. The reason why I think people are apprehensive to the idea, because that was your original question, is I actually don't think people, I think there are some people that genuinely are. I think the coaching section of the Lakers Twitter, they have the metrics and stuff that they want to use to evaluate coaches by. I think that's why they don't like JJ as that coach. There's no real data to look at. It's a mystery box, essentially. But I think I don't think people are actually apprehensive about JJ being the coach. I think what people are actually concerned about is who's going to get the blame if this doesn't go the right way. And that's why I think yesterday I posed the question to Twitter. I said, so who gets credit if everything does go correctly? like if JJ ends up being a good coach and makes the right substitutions, whatever it is, what, you know, who gets credit? And I think what's happening right now is that everybody is trying to, what's it called? Like get ahead of who's going to be responsible for this decision being made. And we can draw straight lines between where the recommendation is coming from, but even then the front office still has to vet it. So it's a part, you know, like Rob always uses the term partnership. He says, and he's also used the word stakeholder when he describes LeBron and AD. Like, this is not an individual person. They both have to sign off on this, and I think they're both okay with it. People are just too worried about who's going to get blamed for it. Like, who cares? If you want the Lakers to win, everybody should be on the three branches of government should be on the same page, front office, right, roster, right. And coaching.
You know, it's not the exact same, right? Because obviously Bronny is LeBron's son, so it's not the exact same. So don't kill me for making this comparison, but – like, Vinay, if the Lakers draft Bronny at the 55th pick, right, you can tell me they like his scrimmage plays, you know, and you could tell me they like his profile, his ability to be a feature NBA athlete and all the, you know, intangibles that he has and the defensive versatility that he may become. And look, I wish Bronny the best, that people are posting him hitting 12 straight threes in open gym. Like, that's awesome. That's also not like an NBA rarity. That doesn't equal. And please stop adding me with JHS and Bronny in the same sentence. Like, I get it. I totally understand it. But like, you know, like I understand. Like, it's okay. But like, it's gonna be clear that a part of getting Bronny was that LeBron James probably wants his son on the team. Like, there's no running away from that. That's not. And again, these don't have to be looked into a negative light or have negative connotations to it, which I think most of these do when you intertwine, right, Vinay, player and management decisions, you get these conflict of interest, which is understandable. It's not like there aren't negatives to this. There's a world where if the Lakers are 8-10, their defense is awful. And JJ seems like a guy that, can have a temperament. Like, he looks like a guy that could yell and get angry at times, and he even shows that on the timeline, strangely, and a lot more often than a lot of people do. But there's a world where, like, if he's telling another guy to run back and he's like, I am running back, but, you know, the other two guys aren't, like, there's places where there's some accountability issues for sure. And JJ doesn't walk in with the cachet of, you know, these some other coach that could have, like a Ty Lue, maybe, you know, that's one at that high level. And, you know, people look at him like, you're the same age as me. Like, what are we talking about? So there's definitely some of that. I think the LeBron thing is loud and it makes sense. And LeBron's going to sign here for whatever he is. And I think it's very clear if he had a choice for which coach he would like to be the coach next year at. I think it's clear that would be JJ Redick. And it feels like it's his job. And Mark Stein coming out saying it's his job to lose. I'd be almost surprised if he doesn't get the job next season. And it's a tough place to be. It's a tough place to have championship expectations in year one. That's not a place that new coaches want to be in. It's a tough road. It's just the options out there and the unique situation the Lakers are in, where their best player is old enough to have this much of a longevity and still have a peer in this group that he has. He can weigh his kind of leverage on. It's new, right, Vinay? This has never been seen before. This is just a rare situation, which is why I think JJ will likely be the coach.
Yeah, you know, I think just overall, like, I it's going to happen, like, in the sense that, like, I think if he does get hired, there's certainly going to be you're certainly going to have the situation where people are throwing blame on one side or the other. It's going to be, you know, the LeBron folks versus the Lakers front office folks or Laker fans, however they divide the factions up now. But like I said, like, if you're like you and I, we just want to win games. We want to be a competitive team. We want to compete for a championship. And to some degree, the things you have to do to get to that point are not things that you like. Like, I think I've been pretty forward that, like, I hated rooting for Rondo when he was on this team. Like, I can't fathom the thought, even Avery Bradley, like, I can't fathom the thought of rooting for, like, I mean, not Bradley as much, but, like, Rondo for sure. Like, a guy who's, like, openly, like, you know, just kind of trashing the franchise and stuff like that. And, you know, just And you know how that 08 team, that 08 Celtics team thinks it's like the greatest team of all time or something like that. I just hated the idea of Rudy Ferrando. But like eventually I even came around to it because I was like, all right, man, like if he's going to help us win a championship, that's just what it's going to have to be. And he did. And I think there's a part of this where Laker fans on one side just have to kind of accept that, hey, if this is what it takes to get LeBron to buy in for these last whatever years that we get out of him to compete on a level that helps us win a championship, then that's what it is. Now, if we hire JJ and, you know, he's not getting the buy-in, or all of a sudden we hear about him having friction with LeBron, then I think that's a very different conversation that we're having about, you know, how did it get to this point, that sort of thing. But if you're a Laker fan, you just want us to win, and we just don't – we've got to beat Boston. Boston's about to go – Boston's going to the Eastern Conference Finals again. Like, it's anyone but Boston right now is what we want. But we have to also be willing to get uncomfortable to maybe make that jump and what it is. That's just my thinking is. But I will tell you what, Raj, I think our timelines are going to be pure comedy when JJ gets hired, for sure. Because I think all season long the throwing stones at each other, that's going to be happening for sure if he ends up getting hired.
Yeah, it's going to be so different because again, like. Me and you, I think, have given Darvin Ham a lot more grace than 99% of people out there.
But I have people calling me a ham stand now. It's just like, all right, say one nice thing about the guy. Now all of a sudden I'm a ham defender.
But I think Darvin Ham's shortcoming, I think both of us agree on this, is he's just not a media savvy dude.
Yeah, and for sure.
I'm not saying you have to be a good coach, but Darvin very much did not give one shit about Laker media or – you know, just the media attention that it gets, and just did not care about any of that. JJ Redick is very good at media. He is incredible. He will be very good at telling you a lot of information without telling you anything. He will be very good at kind of, you know, shaping stories in a way that he wants. And I think it's just going to be interesting to kind of go from Darvin to JJ. Now, the interesting point is most coaches, and I think most teams around the league now, at least try to group their coach in with player acquisitions and rosters.
Yeah.
And I have no idea how that works with JJ Redick. I have no idea. JJ
Redick. We don't know what style of basketball he wants to play. Yeah, there's no clue. Yeah.
That was my next point with this. How, like, is what does, like, I've gotten bits and pieces of it from the podcast. Like, I know JJ Vinay is a foul up three guy. So, like, you know, there's some things that I've been able to kind of acquire, but. The roster stuff, I have no idea.
What you know what? I remember him, and I know we talked about it on the pod. I think we covered a few episodes ago, we covered, we made a recommendation for a specific segment of that Mind the Game pod. And I think I talked about JJ actually makes a list of all the things that a good NBA player, qualities a good NBA player has to have on offense and defense to be a good player in the NBA. I'm going to see if I can find the clip to share it with Lakers Twitter. But I thought that list was great. I was just like, oh, if he's looking, if he's evaluating players like this using these standards of doing it, oh, he's going to be great as like an evaluation. Like, hey, should we add this guy to the roster? Does he help take care of the things that we need him to take care of? So I think if I can find that, I'll definitely share it because I thought that was really great. But I'm with you, dude. I don't know what his basis is. Like, he played for Doc Rivers for a while. You know what I mean? Like, maybe that
style. And him and Doc Rivers do not get along. I don't know.
Yeah, they don't get along. He played with Dwight and under Van Gundy, you know, that four out kind of offense. Yeah. That's a little bit closer to what the modern offense is today. But, you know, we started the pod off talking about Jokic and how uniquely he's a problem. Like, it's got to be different. So what do you think? What do you think about his style?
Yeah. So what I'm expecting at least is he's a very much a modern mind of the game. And you could tell that just from his media entrance, and not just from him, right? The guys he brings on, Nekias Duncan and Coach Steve from the Dunker Spot pod. Those are guys that are very much kind of in the analytical space, but also very much with modern concepts. And JJ is very good at that. If you listen to him break down the game, he's very much in terms of the modern game and, you know, the complex kind of defensive coverages that people do. So I'm expecting at least some nuance and some like creative ideas. Again, none of that means he's a good coach. That those aren't 1+1=2 answers, but that's what I'm expecting. But you have no idea when a guy gets in that chair. right? You just don't know. Like and there's just nothing that tells you who will be good and who won't. It's very tough to kind of pluck out what assistant coach is good. And some assistants are like, I was looking up the other day, Vinay, Sam Cassell has been an assistant since 2008.
Yeah.
And has not got a single head coaching opportunity. And I think that's insane to me. Like, usually coaches who's coached that long and has been in successful positions do. And again, that doesn't mean Sam Cassell couldn't do the job. It's just, you don't know. These head coaching jobs, there's only 30 of them in the league, and teams have their own kind of criteria for who you should get it. And let's be frank, if JJ and LeBron did not have a relationship, JJ would not be a leading candidate for this job.
Yeah, like, that's
right.
I mean, philosophically, that kind of brings up, like, it kind of makes you think, right? Like, I mean, we both have regular jobs too, as well, and you know what we'd love. I think every person in an ideal world would like to think that meritocracy is the way that people get, you know, the positions that they get into. But this is one of those things where it doesn't seem like that's the priority, you know, like it's not like how did you do your 10,000 hours before you finally got this position? It's a little bit more of, well, did you know the right, you know, you happen to know the right guy and are friends with the right guy and do a podcast with the right guy. And so that's why, you know, you might, I don't think that's the only reason why, like, I think he would have to like if he interviewed badly, like, I think JJ would be like, they'd just be like, yeah, okay, well, thanks for recommending JJ, but that we're not going in that direction. So he must be capable of something if he's interviewing well enough to be considered in that manner.
Right. And he was a finalist for the Charlotte job as well.
Yeah.
Right. And look, coaching is not a meritocracy. It's just not. It's not how this works. Steve Nash went from playing right to head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. Right. And it's because he's Steve freaking Nash. Didn't have to do the assistant work. Didn't have to do the grunt work. Didn't have to come up the trenches of the coaching tree. Steve freaking Nash. And Kevin Durant likes me. Too bad, Kenny Atkinson. Like, you're fired. We got Steve Nash in. This is how this works. And Steve Nash just didn't, you know, come up to the level of a head coach. And, like, you'll never know why. It could have been the injuries. It could have been whatever it is. Most people in Brooklyn didn't like his coaching style anyway. But, no, like, this is how these situations work. Sometimes even Pat Riley, right? Very strange ascension into head coaching assistant for a little bit. His head coach gets hurt and he immediately kind of gills up and becomes a head coach and never looks back, wins a bunch of championships. And this doesn't have to be a negative. JJ, I don't know how that relationship was formed, honestly. Like, I have no idea where that, like, JJ and LeBron never played together, but, you know, I'm sure LeBron saw JJ as a big guy in the media space and smartly kind of pointed him out. But and that's how you get these type of opportunities, and JJ is capitalizing on them, right? He's doing good in the interviews. He's bringing his ideas that are, you know, showing off well enough to be offered these type of head coaching jobs, passing guys who have been assistants for lifetimes.
Yeah. Right. What does it say though, Raj? Like, just what does it tell you when he gets hired though? Like, this is asking, like, just
about what,
as a fan of the franchise, we spent an entire season saying that Ham was tactically incompetent. He was not using analytically incompetent because he's not using the lineups that make sense. I mean, this is not even a Ham thing. We did this with Vogel. We did this with a lot of Lakers. We've done it with a lot of coaches that don't, you know, unless you end up winning a championship. What does it say to you that we have now gone from a coach who won us a championship, got fired because he lost a locker room, another coach who handled a tough locker room situation, still got us to the Western Conference Finals, and then got fired off the strength of a single season of the locker room not working out. And now we're in a situation again where a big section of our fan base is really convinced that the difference between us being, like a second round Western Conference Finals team and what we ended up this season is literally anybody but Darvin Ham. And now it sounds like we're going to hire a coach who doesn't have those 10,000 hours attached to his name. And we're going to have our franchise, like, we're just going to roll with it. What does it tell you as, like, what does it make you think, like, as a fan about the position in itself? Because I don't think it's, look, I said it, I tweeted it, and then people started quote tweeting me, telling me I don't know what I'm talking about. I said, I don't think the coach matters. With this team specifically, with these two superstars, I don't think the coach is as important as people are making it out to be. Am I wrong? What do you think about that statement?
I think it says more just of the volatility of a coaching job in general, right? Like the, just how in flux that is, no matter your success. And the exceptions are far and few between. It's Eric Spoelstra. It's Greg Popovich. I mean, that's kind of the names. I can't really think of the other ones at this current time. But, you know, like it's a very short leash. Monty Williams took a team that was terrible, put them to 50 wins, put them to 60 wins, right? And the first year they don't meet expectations.
Gone.
You're gone. And that's the way this coaching job works. And what's the new hot thing, right? Like I think the energy around coaching right now is let's get the smart young guy. These old guys are being, you know, kicked out the league and are losing and kind of are having principles that are kind of being phased out. Thank you, Armel. Steve Kerr as well. Yes. Also, I mean, Steve Kerr inherited. I could say these for any of these coaches, right? Steve Kerr inherited prime Steph Curry. Greg Popovich inherited Tim Duncan very quickly. And, you know, and like these coaches are connected to stars for a reason. I'm not saying that hurts them as coaches. It's just, it helps when you're connected to a generation star. Is Mike Malone some genius coach, Vinay? I don't know, but I know Jokic is like one of the Tim, like, I don't, like I'm not going to
top five center by the time he's done.
Yeah. And so I'm sure Mike Malone realized this and kind of pointed, like moved his stars around to make sure Jokic is in the middle of that. And that takes credit too. It's just, it's tough. I think this says more about that. And also the, like, you see these young coaches parking them up, like a Mark Daigneault, a Will Hardy in Utah, even a Joe Mazzulla, right? Very young coaches. And Ime Udoka even was a very young coach when he started and showed a lot of promise. I think that's the new wave. And JJ Redick seems like the next up there. I think the media to coach kind of path and blueprint has kind of been written, and the Lakers are following that path. Before it was hot assistant on a really good team, right? That was what it was before. When we went and got Luke Walton, remember the conversations, Vinay? It was, oh, we got the guy,
the Warriors,
who's been in the Warriors, you know, brain trust for the last, you know, few years, and he's about to, you know, run D'Lo and Randall like Steph and Draymond, and, you know, get the, and that's just not how it worked. Luke had his own ideas and his own philosophies that were mixed in between Phil Jackson, Steve Kerr, and I forgot the other coach that he came up under. But I think coaching does matter. I think with your point, it's that relationships matter a ton on this next team, right? Like the culture that you build matters a ton. And I think coaches, we see the least amount of their job as any other person in the NBA. Like we see the 48 minutes they coach and almost nothing else. We don't get to see their film work. We don't get to see their behind the scenes. We don't get to see the scouting. We don't get to see the prep. We don't see any of that. NBA players, we get to see the work they do. We see the shooting. We see the shoot arounds. We see them putting in those coaches. We don't see any of that. We just see the product that comes on the floor, which is them not playing. So like they are, it's them through a third party, and it's very tough to judge kind of, how do I know if Coach Ham called this play, but the players didn't run it? I don't know. I'm not in the huddle. I have no idea. So I think there's a break there.
You never hear players say, yeah, coach called a play, I just didn't run it. Oh, I didn't run it well, or I missed a shot. Like, or, you know, like you'll often hear them say, well, he drew up a great play, we got an open shot, we missed it. But you'll never hear them say, yeah, he told me to do this, but I just was like, nah, I'm going to go do this instead. Like, players never going to say that. So coach has to kind of eat the blame a lot of times for things that might have nothing to do with them.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. It's funny. I remember LeBron, because LeBron on his pod kind of always brings up, he tries to like explain to the regular NBA kind of fan, like how little some of the NBA players actually know, like what they're doing out there. So he'll be like, we'll call a play and half the team doesn't know it, you know, or like we'll call this and this, and no one knows what they're doing. So it's funny, even LeBron like bringing up that even veterans in the league don't know what they're doing. So it's tough to evaluate. That's where I think this is. I think this is what it means. It's just not a Lakers specific thing. This is just a coaching. And to me, it portrays to a organization in flux. Like, I think the organizations that have the most, that have a consistent head coach, are the ones that win the most. You see the teams at the top, they have the coaches that that they've stuck with. So yeah, we'll see if JJ sticks like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm going to stick to my guns of, I don't think the coach is going to make, not that the coach isn't impactful, but I think the stuff that maybe he'll do to improve on what we did last season will be, there'll be common sense changes. But I think largely the performance of the players itself is what dictates your success as a team. You know, like the execution, the effort is a big part of it too, as well. The roster construction, the health of the roster. We played an entire regular season without Vando. That's a big part of what we do defensively, identity wise. And then, you know, you compound that with the playing Torian over Rui, like what the roster ends up looking like and how we execute in the regular season, what our health is looks like. I think that'll tell us a lot more about what this team is. And then, hopefully we don't get like JJ Redick lowlights or something like that hitting our timeline after a bad game or something. But, you know, it is what it is. It'll be what happens. But we'll wait and see, Raj. We'll see what happens with the news on this. I have heard the same thing that it's JJ's job to lose. So I don't think that reporting is just made up. I think that's a real thing. Stein's a very reputable guy too, as well. So like he wouldn't report that unless, he trusted the person that said it to him. So, but we'll see, things could change. You never know. Ty Lue becomes available magically. I think he would probably skyrocket to the top of the Lakers list in general. Even before JJ. So I wouldn't be shocked if that's something like that happened too as well. So let's move on to the next topic. Right? Or did you have anything else on JJ before we switch?
I think that's pretty much it. It's been fascinating to see the coverage that it's gotten, and JJ's in the middle of his media run of doing the playoffs and stuff like that. ABC is a nice pipeline. You got Doc Rivers getting the Milwaukee job from being on ABC for 6 months. JJ Redick's been on ABC for like 7-8 months and potentially can get the Laker job. It's a good pipeline for sure.
Yeah. Go straight to media. Just skip the line. All those good folks that spent their entire careers getting journalism degrees and practicing in front of televisions at a local level, hoping to finally make it to ESPN, just get leapfrogged by guys who are willing to go up there and be like, I don't know. What was the thing that Shannon Sharp said the other day? It's a Windhorse clip fly on my timeline. Like, who have the Lakers developed in their history? And then Windhorse is like, Alex Caruso, Austin Reeves, Shannon. This is just a random tangent, but Shannon just like, I was just like, well, he's right. Like, we did develop those guys. Like, he's just like, yeah, but what about Brandon Ingram? And what about Kyle Kuzma?
Julius Randle.
Like, all right, dude, we traded him for Anthony Davis, and the other guy helped us win a championship. I think we're okay, dude. Like, it's okay. Anyways, my whole point of that was, sometimes it is just who you know and how popular you are, how much engagement you can draw. It has nothing to do with your analysis. You just got to sound smart and be willing to say certain things. So it is what it is. But let's move on. Raj, some other news came out today. It came off the heels of LeBron and his wife attending a game for Mother's Day, the Cleveland game in Cleveland. And there's a big hoopla about that. Obviously LeBron showing up in public anywhere is always going to be it's going to be a big story. And so he shows up, and then eventually we get sort of this news that comes out that, you know, everybody knows Donovan Mitchell's extension is coming up. The window to offer an extension is coming up. And like Anthony Davis, when he was in New Orleans, the media has gotten smart. They realize that you don't have to actually wait till the free agency year or the year that the person is going to become a free agent to start pushing trade rumors and all that sort of stuff. They realized a while back that all you have to do is wait and hear it about whether Donovan Mitchell has accepted the extension, especially if the team is going to offer him like the full max extension. Back in the day, some teams would waffle about that. Do we want to give him the full max? Do they not want to give him full max? Cleveland obviously wants to give Donovan Mitchell the full max because they trade a lot for him too as well. Mm-hmm. Asset-wise, there's no reason not to offer him a full max, even if you don't plan on keeping him. It's easier to trade a guy. You get more value back when you have him for 5 years versus expiring. So that story comes out that, you know, Donovan's extension offer is coming up. but Donovan might not be sure about except whether he wants to accept that extension offer. And if that situation does come up, he might want to, you know, dictate where he's. And I think you've mentioned that on the timeline too as well. Donovan Mitchell might have some say as to where he wants to go, might have some influence in regards to that. This is very normal stuff that happens when a guy who's worth basically max extension, you know, delays his extension or turns down his extension. But that news is not relevant just to Cleveland. That news is relevant to the Lakers because not because LeBron was in Cleveland, but because the room, I think Windhorse reported that Donovan Mitchell is, you know, there's a basically a two-team race for Donovan Mitchell. And it would be the Lakers and it would be the Brooklyn Nets if it's not Cleveland. I'm sure other teams can show up. I think Miami is a team that's going to try to find a way to get him to as well. But the Lakers being added to that mix will draw all the headlines, as always, which brings us right back to this thing that we've been talking about since the Lakers lost, which is or actually since the trade deadline, which is adding a third max tier player to your team. Where are you at with, we talked about it as it related to Trae Young and sort of the difficulties that you have with Trae Young because of his size. Let's put the salary cap stuff to the side for now. What do you think about Donovan Mitchell's fit with the Lakers if the Lakers are to trade for him?
Yeah, Mitchell's the, I think, one guy, Vinay, this summer that I would go sell the house for. Like, I think he's the guy that's worth that. Obviously, you know, Trae Young's the other name, and I've been very kind of candid with my feeling on Trae Young. I think guards like that also don't have an athleticism point to them are going to struggle in higher and higher playoff rounds. Mitchell has an athletic portion to his game that is just tougher to remove him from. I think he's also just a bigger pull-up jump shooting threat. It's tougher to trap him and blitz him on ball screens because he's not a tall player, but I think he's just more sturdy and he's physical and can take more contact in beatings. And although he sat out the last two games of their series, and he has his own injury concerns as well, so that's obviously something the Lakers have to think about. But if you are going to go star hunting this summer, which I think both of us feel there's going to be a big kind of push for that, it just feels that way to me, the way the season ended and kind of the reporting that's come out. Not just Windhorse, I believe The Athletic, the guy who covers, I think Jason Lloyd is his name,
came out and
for The Athletic, who covers the Cleveland Cavaliers, said that the Lakers are front of the line. And if Donovan Mitchell does not accept his extension, which I don't think he will, he doesn't really have financial reasoning to do that. Next year, he can sign the 5 for $260. So this year, I think he can sign the 4 for $200. And so I think he's going to deny that extension, and it looks like he'll be on the market. But I love the fit. I think Mitchell and AD have an incredible fit together. It, you know, puts LeBron in more of this dual off-ball, on-ball role. Mitchell, I think, is the type of athlete the Lakers are missing. Obviously, guts your team in a way that's concerning. But, you know, I have concerns with the team building anyway. I have concerns with the margin building anyway. I have concerns with how they fill out the roster in any case. So if you can go get a player like Mitchell, I think he's the one guy on the market that's worth what the Lakers have, which is 3 first, swaps, Austin Reeves, and Rui Hachimura. That's a lot. I understand that. But I think that's the type of caliber player Mitchell is. So he's the one guy I'd go after, Vinay. Are you with me on that? I think he's the guy that you go grab. He's 27 years old, fits snuggy right into the AD LeBron timeline. You just mentioned AD's timeline a while back in terms of his age coming up. He's past his, you know, year 30 season. Donovan Mitchell's still 3 years away from being 30. That's a guy that you can build with going forward. Gives you a high floor. At least you have another on-ball playmaker star that, you know, you can kind of build things around. I think it's a guy. We'll see if the Cavs want to trade him here. The Cavs are trading him at all. Like, that hasn't been decided.
Yeah.
They did give up a lot for him. I keep echoing that sentiment. Vinay, they gave up Lauri Markkanen, Colin Sexton, which is Colin Sexton. I don't know, a very polarizing player, but an NBA player for short. Colin Sexton, Lauri Markkanen, 3 first-round picks and 2 swaps. It's a lot. It's a lot to give up to sell out after year 2 of that experiment because of injuries. So if he's available, I think he's a guy you go after. It's just I wonder if Cleveland makes it. Well, where are you at? Where are you at with the Donovan Mitchell sweepstakes that look like they'll begin here in July?
Yeah. So it was just basketball fit, you know, aside, just looking at it purely from that perspective, forget the cap and stuff like that. I think I would prefer him over Trey. You know, I'm very high on Trey, but again, yes. Donovan's much more physical guy, bigger guy. I'm not as concerned about him being overwhelmed defensively, which was the biggest concern that we had with Trey. I think he's just as, probably not as good of a playmaker, but he's just as prolific of a scorer, can score at multiple levels too as well, just like Trey can. So, and obviously, you know, you pair him with a guy like LeBron, you playmaking, you don't really need it. You need just kind of a bucket getter, and that sort of makes sense. I do have one concern though, Raj. Mitchell is kind of ball dominant. And
yes.
This Lakers team doesn't have that many shots to go around. Unless they're playing like a very fast pace, and it's just very up and down, like regular season. Do you think it would be a concern that you have a guy like Mitchell next to a guy like LeBron and another guy like AD? How do you balance all that stuff out? Because I feel like that's a little important to kind of nail down.
Yeah, it's definitely a balancing act. I think the good thing is these guys all play very different positionally on the floor, and at least there's a little bit more, it makes a little bit more sense, right? Like if you look at the Phoenix's big three, I think they all also have a shot distribution problem. The problem to me with them, there's no bridge between the three. Like there's no bridge between KD, Beal, and Booker. They're all kind of islands in the ocean. Now I feel like at least Mitchell and LeBron have AD as the bridge between both of them. So he can screen for either of them. He can go post for either of them. You can always have two run actions together. LeBron can go screen for Mitchell and be a big man. Like there's just ways that, you know, I think you can counteract that. And I think the talent upgrade is just would probably be too much to pass up. But I'm with you. There's some shot distribution issues. There's some like what kind of shooting do you have around them? Like what shooting can you find at the minimum around them? Can Max Christie finally, you know, enter a rotation and make shots? Does Vanderbilt have any offensive utility that you can put around them, kind of thing? But I'm with you. There's some shot distribution issues. I think it's a little less because I like that one of your stars is a big man. I think that's where the like big threes kind of have fallen off in recent history is like, and they all somehow involve Kevin Durant, but like every single
Kevin Durant. Poor KD. What was the cost? Yes. The cost of going to Golden State is now
No, I'm saying like and it's KD and it's obviously the Clippers. I don't know how much you want to put the Clippers of the Kawhi, PG, and Harden. They're a big three in terms of the shot distribution that you need to be careful of, but there's also no big man in there, and I think that's why there's a struggle with, right? The Clippers offense became Harden and Zoo pick and rolls, which again, two of your big three aren't involved in that. And I think, you know, the Suns in the same way where the Suns are kind of just their offense just includes one of their big three in Brooklyn at work. But I think that team had its own ceiling. So that's where I think this is more of something that makes more sense. Mitchell, obviously 27, right in the middle of his prime, looked incredible in two series already. He's a guy, Vinay, that rises in the playoffs. His numbers go up. His points go up. His efficiency goes up. He's had huge playoff series by himself in Utah. He's led teams to 60 wins in Utah as well. So I think he has a nice kind of portion of his career to where, like, this is the time for him to move. But I keep going back to what they gave up. Like, usually teams want a return on that investment. I don't know if the Lakers have a return on that investment, but if they do, I'm all for it. Are you with me on that? And like the basketball fit, I guess having AD as like a bridge to connect the dots a little bit between this trio.
Yeah, I think Donovan kind of his style of play is just, you know, I'm gonna go score every single time I come down the floor, and it's something that the Lakers can use. I mean, it's like in theory that's kind of what we wanted, like with the whole we should trade for Kyrie when he's with the Nets. Like, you want a guy who will just come down and just score the basketball. And obviously Kyrie's one of the most technically talented, like offensive players that you'll ever see, at his size. I think Donovan's one of those guys who's like that too, as well. I'm also with you there where my concern, once we expand it beyond the basketball fit is where I think things get a little concerning for me, Can we hit on the margins? I'm not sure. What does it actually cost to get a guy like him in terms of players that we have to send out? How much does that actually hurt us? Can we backfill those positions? That sort of stuff. You know, that is what concerns me a little bit more. I know somebody in the chat, I forget where it was. I think it was John in the chat was like, you know, oh yeah, here it is. John in the chat was saying, you know, just get Mitchell, worry about the margins later. I respect that opinion, John, but I don't agree with it at all because I think we've gotten ourselves in a lot of trouble by doing that. And, you know, with the Russell Westbrook thing, like that experience, that was a problem. Like one of my biggest gripes was the front office was really lazy with how they went about filling those margins. And, you know, granted, better minimum is not like you get to pick the cream of the crop, but it was really bad. And as a result of that, that compounded the issue and made it even worse. So I don't think you can ignore the, you know, the margins. But from a basketball fit, I'm with you, dude. Young guy, want to try to keep him healthy. He's had some issues with his health, knee issues, ankle issues, that sort of thing. But stylistically, I think he fits kind of the role without stepping on other players' toes as much.
Yeah, and these all have risks involved with them. Zach Lowe always says with these type of trades, you need to win the title kind of thing. And the Lakers have kind of banked one, so there's a little bit less pressure, right, since they banked one with LeBron. But look, if you hand over 5 years of first-round pick control to another team, it's a lot. Like, that's a huge kind of risky investment, right? You're handing over the first-round picks in the years where LeBron's likely gone and AD, to your point, has kind of passed his prime. You're building with Donovan Mitchell, who we'll see if he kind of gives the Lakers. I think they wouldn't trade for him unless he give them the okay that he's extending. But
oh yeah, for sure, for sure. I don't think any team will unless they know that they're getting an extension.
Or at least a chance for an extension. Some team you know might just take the chance on it. But yeah, it's a huge risk still. Donovan Mitchell is an awesome player. He's also not like Luka Doncic, you know, like, so there's a level of tier right below that he's at, right? He's not like one of the, he's not Jokic, he's not Doncic, he's not one of the, like, five best players in the league, but he's a, I don't know where you'd rank him, Vinay, top 15 type player, Donovan Mitchell, top 10 on some nights. I guess you can kind of argue with his kind of place in the league, but it's not a guarantee. It's not, you know, this big three doesn't guarantee you 65 wins. That's why I think, to your point, the margins matter a lot, right? They really do. You have to probably keep Max. You have to hopefully keep Vando in this deal. And then you got to hit on some young guys. Like, you watch these Colin other Castleton, teams. JHS.
JHS. Rod, you're going to be fighting for your guy, man.
Look, man, he's played 1 year and he's got garbage minutes, man. I see people breaking down his garbage time minutes. Like, what are we doing breaking down garbage? What are we doing
there's something to be said about, you know, like the Twitter, like I sound like an old guy, but like Twitter is a fascinating thing because like people will find like the most obscure thing to like share a low light of because they know it'll get engagement. And it's just like there's like this addiction to the engagement. And this is not a new concept. This is a social media like disease thing. But it's just like there's like no, I have a saying, there's no rules to engagement when engagement rules you. And like I see it with our fan base sometimes. It's just like, bro, JHS, like he'll like brick. He'll have like a really bad brick at the end of the game. And we're winning by like 25. And somebody like just that's the one clip. They don't say anything about the game, but that one clip has to get clipped and shared. And it always goes viral, you know, because it's just easy to dunk on the guy or the kid. 100%. It's just like I don't understand that part. It's like it's just work. Like, why would I want to go clip and make fun of this guy? Like, he's you know, but it is what it is. People do it for whatever reason. It just always cracks me up that people do it.
My favorite thing is because I go to a lot of the games in the G League and I'll like put like, hey, JHS just had 35, 13, and like 8.
Yeah.
Why can't he do that in the league? Bro, like, why can't he have 35 in the league? Like, what do you mean? Yeah, like, he's a rookie, like barely getting his legs under him. Like, he may not be good. I don't know. I just.
That's also fair too. We should be fair to
him. We just kind of throw young guys under the bus very quickly, which you make this point all the time. Me and others are, you know, sadly weeping about KCP. he's got a lot of people kicked out the door with their foot on the back. Like, there are a lot of people ready to just, he did not shoot well against the Suns. So, like, KCP had a bad series against Phoenix. That dude might be one of the most important role players in the last 4 years. Like, that dude is about to win the third ring.
And that's the reason why. But like, I didn't see your tweet when I posted it. I just was literally tweeting it out the same thing because KCP hit like two back-to-back threes. I was like, they're about to, like, Lakers Twitter's about to say we should have never given up KCP.
About to wax.
And then I saw your tweet call. I was like, oh no. but like, no, like the I remember, like, that's why I posted that screenshot of Bron yelling at KCP, because I remember the play that it was. Bron drove to the rim, kicked it out to a wide open KCP on the wing, who passed it up, an open one, to Dennis Schroeder in the corner, who bricked it, because Dennis Schroeder is not a three-point shooter, and it was a contested three that he missed. And I remember Bron after that, like, that's where that screenshot comes from. And I remember when that happened, everybody was like, everybody's got to go. Alex Caruso's got to go because he can't score.
KCP's got to go.
Kuzma, you know, a lot of unsavory things are said about Kuzma. but Kuzma's got to go. And so it's just not to say that people are wrong or they couldn't have that opinion at that time, but it's just like, yo, what he's doing right now for Denver is not what he was doing when we lost Anthony Davis or when we played the Suns in that series. And if nothing else, like, for me, it's just like a reflection. And I think I said it after this Denver series that, hey, the way you guys are talking about Austin and Rui, you guys talked about KCP and Kuzma this way too when we lost to the Suns, and then we got rid of them. And then you guys are like, oh my God, we should have never gotten rid of them. So my thing is, I'm not saying you can't trade players. I'm not saying you shouldn't try to improve. I'm not saying don't go after Donovan Mitchell or don't trade Austin, like Austin Reeves is untouchable or whatever. I'm not saying any of that. But I'm just saying, just use some context and go, okay, is there no way for this guy to be better, or was it just this matchup? You know what I mean? Like, I think we've been pretty fair with, like, D'Lo. Before the series, we said with D'Lo, we're going to find out if D'Lo has actually improved or not, because he's got to see Denver in the first round. And we'll get a good idea if he's made the stride. He made strides in the regular season. We gave him credit for that. But has he made strides for playoff basketball? Because that's something he hasn't been good at, or he's been less efficient at. And we need him to be good in order for us to win. And he had a good game. You know, he had some good stretches in games, but for the most part, it was a missable series for him. And we can confidently say that now that, okay, maybe he's not ready to go. I wouldn't say the same thing about Rui. Rui was crucial in that Memphis series. Austin was crucial in the Memphis series, in the Golden State series, even in the Denver series, I would say he was good.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I forget why I was saying all this, but it's just like, you've got it. Like, when you evaluate role players and stuff like that, I think you have to contextualize what that situation is. I think we try to do that with guys like, obviously, JHS hasn't played, but these other guys, we want them to succeed, but we have to also be honest about what's going on with them.
Right, and there's a huge contingent of fans. Again, and I get it. Like, this is a rough year. It's been a rough few years, and most of them are, let's just throw everything off the ship, right?
Yeah.
Throw everything in the ocean. Let's get a new, you know, new people. And I always say, like, we should proceed with caution in that. Yeah. Like, this is a team that won 47 games, and most fans, if you ask them, believe if the coaching was different, they'd win like 52 plus. If you're going off of that sentiment, then you have a 50-win team that you're throwing off the boat for, like, it may work, and I still think you should go do it. But there should be some caution that you proceed with, right? And there's a world, Vinay, where you trade Austin to the Cavs. Let's say the Cavs go full rebuild. Some good team comes and plucks Austin for two first round picks or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And next year Austin's on some championship team that can work around his flaws, right? As a whatever flaws you think Austin has on the defensive end, or as an on ball creator, they put him back in that role the Lakers had. And we're doing this same movie again where we're waxing poetic because we got three stars and let's say it just didn't work for whatever reason. Our margins were terrible, right? We have another 38-year-old vet min players that are filling out our team. There's a world where, again, people go look and, oh man, we should have kept Austin in that deal. It's like, dude, you guys, same people that said ship him out for Trae Young, for ship him out for, you know, DeJounte Murray, right? Or whoever it is out there. And look, Michelle saying in the chat, I would keep Austin. I would too. I just don't think a deal like this gets done without him in it. It's just Like, I don't think that's just a fact. Yeah, I think that's just the fact of the matter. Austin is your biggest trade piece. He's bigger than any of the first round picks, in my opinion, that you have to deal. He's obviously better than the first round pick you have this year to deal. So I think Austin is worth about 1.5 first if you had to like put an asset acclimation on him. But yeah, there's a world where that happens too. And I think that's something that people should proceed with caution. You just saw the effects of this. You just saw Alex Caruso playing in Chicago, a guy we let go for tax or money situation, and then obviously KCP in Denver, and Josh Hart obviously was part of the AD deal, but another guy I feel like we could have kept if our front office was able to negotiate a little better, and Kuzma, a guy people are kind of, well, some people are fawning to have back, but yeah, it's a tough situation. Just trading the farm for one player is never usually the solve unless you have like three top 10 guys, and I don't know if that's what you have next year. So
do you think it's fair to say, and we were discussing this in the Discord, do you think the two star and then like really like, and then paying a premium for like elite role players is a better way to go about doing things? Like, so I'll give you an example, right? Like Aaron Gordon is an elite role player. Elite for what he does. MPJ, or sorry, I want to say MPJ. I think he's really good, but I think he has like skill. I say KCP is an elite role player. Who's probably on a pretty, I think both those guys are on decent contracts. But do you think like AD, Bron, and then let's say we get a point guard that's like, he's not like a star point guard, but he's like a guy that you'd have to pay 15 to 20. Well, I mean, we have D'Lo paying $18 million, but like a $20 million point guard and a $20 million center. Is that a better way of going about it? Cause we look at some of these other teams, you know, that's what they're doing. Jaden McDaniels getting paid a lot of money. Mike Conley getting paid decent money. PJ Washington getting paid decent money. Daniel Gafford getting paid decent money. Like a lot of these guys are getting paid. These are not, we've got our two guys. They're going to score the basketball. You know, they'll play defense however we scheme them to play defense, but the rest of these guys are going to be elite at what they do. Is that just a better way? Because I like that idea more than the three-star model. What do you think about that?
I would say yes. I think the part of this that you have to have is you need players out kicking their contracts, right? That's the reason I like – and the worst thing people call me, Vinny, you laugh at this, is like an Austin stan, right? And the reason I'm this way is because I think people gloss over the contract so quickly because it was nice when it happened and they're just, oh yeah, Austin got his $11 million. What does he do for me now? But to outkick that deal is major, right? We just watched the Dallas Mavericks, who Vinny are starring Derrick Jones Jr., who's making $2.7 million.
Yeah,
the value he's giving them at $2.7 million as a starting
is crazy.
Locking down Paul George, he doesn't lock down SGA, but he does a good enough job, right? Yeah. He rebounds really well. He's a great cutter, and he fits next to his stars, and he's hitting catch and shoot threes. The value at a minimum contract is absurd. PJ Washington also, I think, is making like $11 million a year, and he's putting up Paul George numbers in the second round. Like, that's the margin to kick out. And I would argue with Denver, Aaron Gordon's out kicking that $20 million deal. I think he's way more valuable than that to that team than the four-year 100 unit. Like, I think he's out kicking his deal. MPJ, you could argue. I think KCP has kind of out kicked his deal, and Jokic is just the best player in the world. So it's a tough comp there. But I think you need players to out kick their contracts, right? Minnesota as well has Nikhil Alexander Walker, who's out kicking it. I don't think Edwards' extension has even kicked in yet. If I have that correct, I think it extends next summer, but. And look, they're overpaying for Gobert, and that's part of it as well. But they have like a lot of young guys that are playing well for them. It's just, I think that's where it is. And with the role, I thought it was with the role guys. It's just, you have to hit those, and the gap between D'Lo and a star guard is so wide, but you don't get a player like D'Lo for the minimum. And it's a tough rope to walk, but I thought, honestly, Vinny, I thought we did it as well as you could. Like, we liked all our signings. They just, maybe we just played the best team in the league, and so those things don't show up, right? There's a world where we play OKC round one, and you beat OKC, and there's a world where you get maybe, I don't know, maybe you get the Clippers without Kawhi in round two and you beat them. And then all of a sudden, this looks totally different if Rui has the series he just had and D'Lo had the series he had after two more rounds of under their belt of wins. It's a tough place to evaluate when you play the best team in the league. And it gives you a lot of answers to questions, but it also kind of gives you the license to be a little bit more crazy and lose some of the stability. It's a tough route. I think the two-star plus role player is probably the most like easiest way, and Boston has kind of gone this route as well. They've kind of paid these like Jrue Holiday, Porzingis, like they went and got a bunch to fill around their team instead of going getting that third star, right? That makes the $60 million. They went and filled that in with Holiday, Porzingis, and Derek White, those type of dudes, and they're winning a ton of games. We'll see what works. I think you can win with either mold. I think the issue with the three-star is if the one-star has an injury, you're kind of dead in the water, right? Yeah.
You just don't have the injuries can hurt you in different ways. Like if AD goes down and we have those two guys, like if we don't have a decent backup center, that's going to be problematic. Like your defense will fall off a cliff.
And you won't have one. You have the minimum to work with. Like, let's be real. Like, where are you getting a great backup center for the minimum? It's tough. You're in the haze. You're in the Christian Wood business of guys. I think it's that's the situation you're in.
To use a metaphor that you like to use or an style of framing it. I think when you go with the three-star model, your ceiling is incredibly high, but your floor can also be incredibly low. And I think that's a good way of putting it. When you have a more balanced out roster, money wise and just talent wise, your floor is higher. And then, you know, just depending on matchups or coaching, whatever it is, your ceiling is just dependent on that too as well. And that kind of brings me back to this thing about JJ. Because that I'm going to try and find that clip, because the way JJ evaluates role players or evaluates the value of a player and what's important to winning basketball, I thought that if that's true and if he sticks to what that is that he describes, that could be super helpful for hitting on the margins. You know what I mean? Like having a guy who has been a role player, like that's like we joke about the Bron JJ relationship. But you also kind of need a role player who's played next to a guy like he hasn't played next to Bron, but he's played next to guys who were featured in offenses, like were stars in offenses in the modern NBA, like Bron is and ADR, and like you know he played next. I think he played with Chris Paul and Blake, right? He was part of that team, that Lob City team, I think at one point, or I don't remember if they overlap.
Yes. But he did.
He was part of that team, right? Yeah, the Doc team. Yeah. And so, like, he knows how to play against a guy who's a ball dominant guy, and then another, Blake Griffin guy who's a force inside the paint, a two man game that spans pick and roll. We don't do that much, but a two man game. So you kind of want a role player who's played around that, has an idea of okay, what do we actually need around these two guys for a team to be successful. In the long run, which we might not have had with Ham, because Ham is a little more old school, cut from an older cloth, with his style.
Yeah. There's like this line of demarcation of like how good the player is versus how good a coach they are, right? Usually, like the star players aren't good coaches for some reason; they just can't connect to the majority of the roster, right? Because most of the roster are not stars. The star is usually one player, and so like that line is. The guy who's kind of walked the closest is Jason Kidd, right? He's kind of the best star. I think Jason Kidd's a good coach. I don't know how good a coach he is. He's got, again, he inherited Luka Doncic in his prime, which is another thing he's got, and Kyrie Irving and whatever it is. But I think he's done a fine job in Dallas so far. But yeah, JJ Redick kind of walks right into that. He's a role player, very much Steve Kerr-ish, right? A shooter on a team, kind of shooter was the mode that he was in. So he's right in line with like what successful coaches were in the past. But again, none of this equals a good coach. I think they said like the average lifetime for a coach is like 2 years. Like that's, you know, like that's how quickly these dudes just get recycled. I keep saying this when it breaks my brain every time. Frank Vogel won a title in 2020, took a year off between this from now to 2024. He's been fired twice.
Yeah.
He's worked three of those years. Like it's That's an insane number there. And Phoenix is a unique situation. Obviously, the Lakers were a unique situation, but this shows the volatility of coaching jobs. Adrian Griffin was 33-13 when he got fired with the Bucks. You can break down the X and O's. You can break down how many timeouts. You can break down the relationship with the locker room. It was 33-13 or 33-30. I forget what it was, but it was some. He was like the one or two seed, and he got let go for Doc Rivers. It's just the coaching situation is so volatile, and it's so tough to analyze. And GMs fire coaches for reasonings that aren't always their evaluation. Like, I feel like if you took truth serum to a lot of the execs and Lakers, probably didn't want to fire him. But like, public perception is, like, you got to change something now.
Something's got to change, yeah.
Yeah, and Darvin Ham is the recipient of that. He's a scapegoat. Makes it sound like he did nothing wrong, which that's not the
conversation I'm trying
to put. There's a wrong way to put it, but yeah, like, I think he's kind of being put in front of problems that when there's like larger also issues that will continue on when Ham is gone. So we'll see, but this feels like JJ Redick's era in Los Angeles is coming soon.
Yeah, it looks like it's on its way. There was another part of the, you know, the Athletic has now become this on the topic of Donovan. The Athletic has now become like the go-to place, and I think it's Woj and Shams have become like the go-to guys to drop a hit piece on a coach like as soon as the series ends, and it's just like they just did it again. After the Cleveland series, talking about J.B. Bickerstaff, locker room stories. But there's a part of that story that I thought was interesting as it relates to all this Donovan Mitchell stuff. You know, they referenced Donovan Mitchell's extension, but then there's another part of this, and I just want to read the excerpt from it. It's about Darius Garland.
Right.
And it basically says, furthermore, I'm just reading the excerpt for the folks that haven't read it or don't have an Athletic subscription, whatever. It says, furthermore, rival executives believe the Cavs will have to seriously evaluate the fit of Mitchell and Garland and ultimately may have to choose one or the other. Should Mitchell decide to stay long-term, sources briefed on the matter say Garland's representation, Clutch Sports CEO Rich Paul, would have a conversation with Cavs officials on potentially finding a new home for the one-time All-Star. The context of all of this is basically Mitchell's going to have an extension, but I guess there's essentially going to be a situation where, you know, maybe Garland is being, his ability is being cannibalized a little bit by having a guy like Donovan Mitchell on the team, because they're both guards and they both kind of need the ball in their hands to be effective. Neither are like these defensive 3-and-D, you know, they're not like Jalen Williams, who could just play off of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and then also, you know, be the ball dominant guy when he's off the floor. So I thought that was interesting. I was going to cover it, but maybe we'll save it for another time if this thing actually gets any legs. Garland is clutch. Yeah. We know that clutch players typically get associated to the Lakers. He makes less money than Donovan Mitchell would be, you know, not a max, full max. Any quick thoughts on that? Because I don't want to stay for too long on it.
Yeah, I just, if I'm Garland, I don't want that coming out. I just played the worst series of my life. And to come out and basically say the reason I can't get my game going is because I'm playing next to Donovan Mitchell is just, and also just the beauty of conflict of interest. I mean, Shams being clutch, saying sources briefed closely on the matter, and then referring to Rich Paul is just, it's just beautiful kind of conflicts there. But no, I mean, that's it. The Athletic has dropped pretty much. You talked about coaches, just a here's what's burning inside the kitchen of every team that's lost so far. It's just whichever team loses, here's quotes from why they hate each other. It's just an incredible kind of run that's been going on. So interesting. Those quotes are interesting. The Jared Allen piece I thought was fascinating. I brought this up to you in terms of the like games played, and I guess players were upset that Jared Allen did not take
injection to for injections, the pain.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which again, that's a personal decision.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't know how that works in league circles, but
I mean, we saw a guy not take a vaccine and completely destroy a franchise from within. So those kind of things matter, dude. So you know, it's not personal
decisions.
Yeah, those are personal decisions. Sorry, that's just how it works. Like, you know, that they could be really, really bad, and sometimes it's just, you know. Maybe the situation was much worse. I don't know what to think about Darius Garland. He's a young guy. You know, seems like a good floor general, but again, I think he's a smaller guy, not a big guard. Kind of run into some of the same issues that you do with Trey and stuff like that. But we can have that conversation at another time, Raj. So we'll let the folks go. But before I let the folks go, Raj. The gang in the Discord, our fellow detailers pointed out to me, and I actually kind of noticed it too, but I didn't want to bring it up, noticed that you don't sign off with your usual peace after I say goodnight to everybody on the pod. So there was a question of concern if maybe Raj is not at peace since the Lakers have been knocked out of the playoffs. So I'm just letting you know, I'm not saying no pressure. You don't have to say it.
All right, but I'll make sure.
That's why I love the community that we've built in that Discord, because they take notice of even like the small mannerisms that we have keep us honest. It was Simo. Yeah. Simo brought it up. I think it was really nice of him to bring it up. But you know,
there's not been much peace going around, honestly.
But anyways, as always, we appreciate all the folks that tune in to the live stream. If you don't get a chance, if you jumped in midway through, you can always replay it on Twitter, or you can just wait by tomorrow morning. It'll be up on Apple and Spotify under Lakers Detailed. And as always, whether you're listening to this now or you're listening to it whenever you listen to it, we appreciate you. And we hope you have a wonderful day. And if nothing else, we'll catch you in the next one. Take it easy.
Peace.